Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hey, parents. Welcome to the Wonder Parenting Podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. I'm Tim Wright, along with Dr. Michael Gurian. Part two of a discussion we started last week, a rescue plan for boys. And we're looking at, in some ways, competing storylines about our boys. On the one hand, we have the storyline that most of us live with if we're parents of boys or we're educating boys or we have boys in our lives, and that's that they're falling behind. And then there's that cultural storyline that says, well, yeah, maybe that's true, but we've got to continue to take our resources and focus on girls because boys have had everything, or boys are the problem. And Michael has been sharing with us on and off throughout this whole podcast series for 295 episodes, a different storyline, which we're focusing on today. So, Michael, it's good to have you back as we talk about A Rescue Plan for Boys, Part 2.
Thanks, Tim. Great to be here.
And you're writing more about this on your Substack page. Tell us where we can learn more about that.
Yeah, so if folks go to michaelgurian.substack.com, Michael Gurian, G-U-R-I-A-N, michaelgurian.substack.com, and you go there and it sort of almost immediately says, type your email address in here. And I just want to say to folks that if you type in your email address and you say, I want free, you don't actually get anything. I just can't get Substack to take that off.
Right, yeah.
You know, that's just how they do it. You need to pay to get the writing. But it's $50 a year, and you get the equivalent. I send something out every week, and you get the equivalent of three books in a year. So it's a very good deal. And you join, and then I'm right now doing my best publishing. I'm doing there on Substack. All my newest, my memoir, my these books, the Boys a Rescue Plan chapters, et cetera, is there on Substack. So I hope people will join that, and we'll talk about it today, but you'll get obviously even deeper in the writing there.
So that's michaelgurian.substack.com. And before we dive into part two today of A Rescue Plan for Boys, a thanks to Marion Hill, who's doing some great work with boys and girls when it comes to fathers and father figures. Man cave men all need to be caring, actively engaged, vested, and encouraged. They seek to take a leadership role and encourage positive relationships of fathers and male role models with their children. And they promote the importance of nurturing fathers and mothers, parenting in healthy marriages. And in doing so, they improve the lives of children and families. You can learn more about them on our website, wonderparenting.com. That's wonderparenting.com. So, Michael, we've talked last week in some broad strokes about some of the challenges that we face in our culture, our boys are facing, and that our boys are facing in part because we have these storylines out there that suggest that boys have always had it okay. We really need to focus on girls. And we're not in any way, shape, or form saying we shouldn't focus on girls. We've always said it's both. But there are some needs that aren't being met for boys right now. And so just give us a quick summary of some of the things that we're seeing today with boys. Let's start, for example, with depression and depression rates in boys and why that's happening.
Yeah, everyone knows that depression anxiety rates for our children have gone up, COVID, post-COVID, that mental health you know, is in decline for our kids. We've probably seen in the news quite a bit about girls and anxiety and depression mm-hmm. going up, and absolutely has. And we've talked about that on this program. At the same time, we haven't realized that depression, anxiety for boys is going up, and especially depression. And when you see violence, that's a depressed boy. Boys are testosterone driven. They're fight or flight. When they get depressed, they can become dangerous. And so not just are they clinically depressed, but testosterone levels are down, which increases male undermotivation and depression. And they're down about 30% over the last 30 years. Low testosterone, more depression, and then just, you know, situational depression coming from the outside, lack of father, more depression. There's a number of things that we'll probably talk about that are increasing the amount of depression that our males are experiencing, but it's not overt. And so it's very hard for us to measure it, because the way we measure depression is much more along the lines of how female brain does depression, which is, you know, clearly I'm sad, I'm crying, I'm sad, I'm trying to tell you I'm sad, you know, please help me. But the male brain doesn't do depression that way. Many times, a lot of the time, it doesn't do depression that way. And so we don't even realize how many American males are depressed. So the numbers have gone up, right? We all know that. The CDC mm-hmm. knows that. But the numbers are even higher than that with guys with male type depression. And then all the brain disorders. Males tend to dominate the severity of brain disorders. Exception would be anorexia, bulimia, but autism, ADD, ADHD, you know, schizophrenia, antisocial personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder. There's, you know, most of the brain disorders, more males. And so, you know, more issues. And so mental health is just an area where males' mental health has deteriorated significantly. And then, of course, school, you know, boys are behind in pretty much everything in school that has to do with education. So those are some. Oh, and then suicide, which we talked about last week, but males are four times as likely as females to commit suicide. Fentanyl deaths are about 70% male. Homelessness, 70 to 80% is male. So those are some stats.
And so all of those things, whether you're raising boys or girls, all of those things, when they affect boys, has a significant negative impact on society.
Oh, absolutely. That's why sometimes for 35 years, I've just shaken my head at the fact that folks won't deal with this, with what's going on with boys, because, you know, as you've heard me say before, nearly every social problem that we have connects with our abandonment of boys' development, boys and men, whether it's violence or unemployment or you know, under motivation or whatever it is, depression, domestic violence, et cetera, you know, connects with abandoning boys' development and not helping them to develop well. So if we want to save our culture or enhance our culture, and if we want a safer life for everybody, girls, women, trans, gender nonconforming, everybody, if we want a safer life and a better life for everybody, we got to pay attention to boys.
So last week we looked at a couple of the, I'm going to call them barriers today, that keep us from really, as a nation, a culture, addressing boys' issues. One is a word that you call feminophobia, mm-hmm. which is a fear that leaders often have of a extremist, maybe that's a strong word, feminists who don't believe that we should take boys and their needs seriously at all. And they're afraid that if we talk about boys, this particular lobby group will turn on them, cause problems for them, make life difficult. And so they just tend not to bring up boys' issues. And then yeah. You also talked about the oppressor-oppressed model, where males have been seen as the oppressor, and it's time for us essentially to focus on the oppressed, which would be women, minorities, and so on, and how both of those barriers, models, don't serve anybody well, because I may be putting words in your mouth, but if we don't help boys, everybody loses.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. We've set up these, I'm going to give an example, a practical yep. example of how this happens, how this feminophobia works in government combined with the oppressor oppressed model. and how it keeps us paralyzed in at the leadership levels. So Biden, so I mentioned last week that, you know, Clinton administration, George Bush administration, Barack Obama administration, Trump administration, Biden administration, right? So these are the ones where I've tried to help with my colleagues. And in every one of these administrations, you know, we always run up to into feminophobia, which is that fear of the women's lobby, fear of what they see as this monolith called feminist, and that this monolith called feminist is going to destroy them, not vote for them, boot them out of office if they care about boys and men. So things in every one of those administrations, if we had time, I could tell you how in each case, boys and men came up, and in each case, it got shot down. But I'll give you one that's very contemporary, the Biden administration. So the Biden administration, very soon after Joe Biden took over, by the way, I voted for Joe Biden, so it's not going to be an attack on him. They took over, and they created the White House Gender Policy Council, White House Gender Policy Council. They funded it with a huge amount of funding. And it's a gender policy council, right? So it's not just a women's policy council, it's a gender policy council. So it should include everybody. So, however, it doesn't include boys and men. So there's no study and no policy study and no policies being put forth that involve boys and men. And when we all ask them, you know, the staffers at the White House, okay, why not just call it a women's policy council like Obama did? You know, why are you calling it a gender policy council? You're not talking about boys and men, or please talk about boys and men, you know? And they said, no, you know, men are the oppressors. Men have had it all. Men get everything. We're not focusing on them. And they love to use, so people who are feminophobic, who are afraid of this monolithic lobby that they perceive, and what I've called in Saving Our Sons the dominant gender paradigm, which kind of flows through from academe, through media and government, right? That oppressor oppressed model we talked about, that they bring up health. And so what they bring up is, well, but women are underrepresented in health, and men get most of the health resources. And then they bring up most of the clinical trials, you know, are on males, right? And females are left out. Okay, so that was true between 30 and 50 years ago. It was true. And the reason it was true is that the way our culture looked at it and the way the medical community looked at it is that we were not going to put women through, you know, women were not disposable the way men were. So we were not going to give women drugs that are experimental, et cetera, because we're protecting them, you know, but we are going to give them to men. That was kind of the core philosophy. Obviously, that really wasn't the right philosophy. And so, you know, starting around 25 to 30 years ago, clinical trials are for both males and females. So the drugs that all of us are using now for our health have been tested on both males and females. But they use that old, you know, kind of thing they've created, that straw man, which is that you know, more health resources go to men and all that. And they say, you see, males have it all and women don't have it. And so then we go, but wait a minute, the women and children's hospitals, there's no men's hospital. There are women and children's hospitals, right? And look at the stats on who uses healthcare. More women use healthcare than men, and more girls than boys, you know, and then they don't return the phone call. So it's not just to blame Biden or Trump or anybody, really. They're all in this bind where if they are going to pay attention to boys, they think they're going to be voted out of office.
Yeah. Well, we need, this is where, and you've always said this, the grassroots. We need parents, we need educators, grandparents to step up and say, wait a minute, we love our boys, we love our girls. Let's make the world a better place for boys and girls. We're focusing, of course, on boys today. So we're going to take a little break, Michael, and I want to get to the third barrier challenge to dealing with boys, and that's our understanding of masculinity in 2024. So you're listening to the Wonder Parenting Podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. We'll be right back. Americans take about 20,000 breaths a day and spend an average of 90% of their time indoors. And yet the indoor air that we breathe can be up to 100 times more polluted than outdoor air, according to the EPA. Indoor air pollutants can cause respiratory symptoms like sneezing, congestion, scratchy throat, and even more serious health problems like lung and heart disease. So what's the solution? Introducing Air Doctor, the air purifier that filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so your lungs don't have to, including allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code WONDER, and you'll receive up to $300 off an air purifier. Exclusive to podcast customers, you'll also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Lock this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com, airdoctorpro.com, and use the promo code WONDER for fresher air. So, Michael, you touched on this a bit last week, and I want to pick up on it now. And that's this, it's just a big challenge we have in our culture trying to decide, is masculinity good or bad? You know, there are some storylines out there that say it's just toxic, period. And we have to demasculinize boys to help them be better. And of course, that makes really no sense if you think about it. We would never say defeminize girls to make them better. So talk about this. What's going on with our understanding of masculinity?
Yeah. Yes. I think part of what's happened is we're biophobic. So here comes another Gurian thing, biophobia. Okay. And again, on Substack, you're going to see my articles on this. I go deeper in. Biophobia is the fear of our human biology, specifically male and female. And you and I have covered biophobia in various ways over the last 5-6 years, you know, because we've talked about what's male and female, what's gender nonconforming, you know. And so I'm returning to that for a moment because it's part of why we have such trouble figuring out masculinity. We as a culture have substituted, and especially the lobbies we're talking about, you know, that are keeping us from helping boys, we've substituted culture for nature.
Yep.
And this began in academe around 50 years ago, so in the academy, and it began especially, some would say a little earlier, and it began especially when sociology began to take over, right? So academic institutions were giving degrees in sociology, and sociology is you know, soft science, not hard science, right? It's get 10 or 20 people together, 50 people together, study them, and then write a book. And I know I'm being flippant, but because I use sociology in my own work, so I'm kind of being flippant to make a point that sociology is deceptive when it comes to science, even though it can give us a lot of great insights. But it's not dealing in human biology. It specifically says we're not going to deal in that. I'm just going to pick people, look at them, and then observe them and tell you how I think the social system is working on them and how socialization is working on them. And that's where the study of masculine and feminine comes up. And it was really important 50 years ago for academics to be studying males and females by studying their culture, masculine and feminine, and then saying, okay, we don't actually have to study biology. We don't have to pay attention to male and female or any of this, because we can just say, look at these 50 men and look at these 50 women. And we're going to call that masculinity, what we see in those 50 men. And we're going to narrowly define it, you know, what we mean by masculinity. And of course, unfortunately, it got defined to the negative. What was masculine was bad. And then we're going to look at femininity. And we're going to say, well, we don't really like the word femininity. So we're going to say this is what a woman is. And this is what women are. And they don't necessarily have to be feminine, because that serves the oppressor, so they can be stronger. And then all the stuff came through the culture with, I get to be a bitch now, I'm a woman, I get to be a bitch, and all that. You know, fair enough. I mean, it was women's empowerment. And so they decided not to use femininity anymore to look at women's culture, but they gave males masculinity, and they kept that label. And so a couple things happen. One is they're not dealing with male development. They're not actually dealing with male biology, not dealing with sexual dimorphism, that male and female brains develop differently. that females and males need some different things. They're very similar in many ways, but they need some different things to develop well, to mature well, to become adults, to become women and men. That stuff they don't have to deal with because what they're dealing with is masculinity. So now they're dealing with a frame, right, for male life. And in that frame, they say, okay, masculinity is bad because look at these groups of males. What they want is power. They're aggressive. And then they have a list of what's masculine. And then they just end up saying, well, those are bad things. And why are they bad things? Well, because they're going to oppress girls and women. And then also we can bring civil rights into that too. And that's going to oppress women and minorities. So the masculine is oppressive. A better approach, the approach obviously that I've used for all my decades in the work, is to start with biology and say, okay, forget about masculinity for a minute. That's a framing, right? That's a sociological frame. So let's put it aside for a moment and let's look at the nature of boys. Let's look at from the very beginning how they are naturally different than girls. And so we need to serve them just the same way we got to serve girls for who they are. We have to serve boys for who they are. And it's biological and it's worldwide. We see the same trends worldwide. So this, but if you're feminophobic, you're also biophobic. If you're afraid of the feminist lobby as a leader, I can almost promise you that when I say to you, well, you know, do you want to talk about how males and females are different? That leader is going to say, well, no, I can't talk about that. There's really no difference, or they'll change the subject and they'll say, what I need to talk about is how do we change masculinity? Because that's what's destroying our culture. And that's kind of how it goes. So my call to action, one of my calls to action for people listening is when you hear people carrying on a conversation about masculinity, but they're not carrying on a conversation about the nature of boys, and they may not be capable of it because they don't have the research. They don't know. They know in their guts that boys have a nature. As you've said, Tim, people in the grassroots, parents, teachers, they know stuff's going on and boys need help. And they know that boys are different from girls and that we have to attend to boys and girls in specific ways. But you know, they don't have the research because they haven't tried to get it because there's a lot of fear of dealing with biology, just like there's fear of dealing with anything having to do with males, except to say that's they're too masculine and they're bad, and we got to get rid of that bad masculinity, and that paralyzes us.
So a couple things that come to mind. First of all, I think about the absolute confusion in our culture today around these things, because on the one hand, we don't want to talk about biology. And yet almost every day there's a new article out, especially from a female point of view, about how women's health and women's health issues are different than the health issues of men, which is a biological imperative.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
And yet there's no difference between male and female, or we don't want to talk about those differences. And yet there's this biological imperative that say, yes, we need to look at women differently because their health issues are different. They have a uterus, for example. Men don't. And at the same time, men's health issues are different, right? Prostate, whatever it might be. The second thing is, and I've been chatting with my brother about this a bit. He's got a daughter, a granddaughter, and they talk once in a while about their biology classes. And I said, well, don't they ever talk about XX and XY? And he said, nope, not anymore. Now, even though that's biology, even, you know, we're afraid to even talk about biology in biology classes. It just seems kind of ridiculous at some point, doesn't it?
It's ridiculous. It's biophobia, though, that has come from that framing, so that now academics, well, now it's all been politicized, of course, but also academics who are training, you know, the BAs and MAs and MEDs, et cetera, you know, that folks are getting who go into education, they're getting trained in academe. And remember, these are all really, really good people. I'm incredibly teacher supportive, right? They're really good people. When they go through this training, they're now being trained in biophobia, which is you can't talk about biology, especially, you know, sex difference, sexual dimorphism, male, female, male, like you've said, you can't talk about that because And then, you know, why? Well, they've been told that it's used to oppress, and now it's going to be oppress trans and gender nonconforming people. Mm-hmm. So that's been added on. But the LGBTQ plus movement, the part of the movement that's about erasing sex, that is pure post-radical feminism, mm-hmm. that part of that movement. The part of the movement that is about getting equal rights for gay people, you know, gay marriage and all of that, that is democracy. That's equality.
Right.
You know, that part of the movement is sacred. But the part that's saying you got to erase male, female, and you can't even teach it to kids anymore, that's the biophobia that transfers right. in.
Well, it's just going to create all kinds of problems. If we don't have permission to talk about our differences, then we do end up with these challenges. Oh, well, okay, we do need to treat women differently than we treat men when it comes to their health issues and so on and so forth. But boy, if you ever get to a point where you can't talk about that, everybody loses in the end. And of course, we're seeing our boys lose. And when our boys lose, our girls lose. When our girls lose, our boys lose. So we're going to come back, Michael, and we're going to spend the last few minutes of this, and we're going to just talk to parents, talk to educators who are listening, or who are still listening anyway. And and we're going to say, all right, here's what you can do to rescue our boys. We'll be back in just a moment. The Wonder Parenting Podcast, a brain science approach to parenting.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, Michael, dig into your magical bag of tricks. What are some things we can do as parents and as educators to begin to rescue our boys?
Okay, so one thing is I'll break it into this different spheres. So in the education sphere, look at what, so this is for teachers, administrators, and for parents. Look at what teachers are getting professional development in or training in. You know, there it's public, it's on websites, you can see it. And if they're getting training in you know, ABCD, whatever they all are, but they're not getting training in boy-friendly education or something at least that would connect with learning how to teach boys, then, okay, practical step. You go into that school district and you say, look, here's your data. Your data is on your website. So here's your data. Your boys are, you know, way, way behind your girls. And most of the dropouts and the flunking and the suspensions and expulsions are boys. It's all the data. It's on your website. I had to dig for it, but I got it. And so it's been disaggregated. If it hasn't been disaggregated, the school district needs to disaggregate it. And now we can see it. So you got to have training on boy-friendly education and have it be boys and girls learn differently training. Like that's what Green Institute does. So we do both boys and girls. That's fine. It's got to include a component on how to teach boys. So in the education sector, that's in the area of solution, because we know and folks who have followed my career know all the data we have on this, and it's on GurionInstitute.com. You can see the schools that do that. That do the boys and girls learn differently training and embed it. The grades for both girls and boys go up, right? There's just generally more equality. So grades, test scores, gender gaps close, literacy gaps close, et cetera. In the parenting sphere. So in the parenting sphere, there's a few things we need to practically do. We need to focus as parents on boys' development discreetly from girls' development. So while we're going to raise our kids as our kids, we have to look at girls' development and we have to look at boys' development. And we got to get our families together. That's mom, dad, or two moms, two dads, grandparents, et cetera. Get the families together and say, okay, what is our plan for girls' development? What is our plan for boys' development? So here, talking about boys, who is going to start mentoring this boy, you know, starting at 8, 9 years old? Where is the father? And they can mentor him earlier, but especially in pre-puberty, we need to make sure there's a couple male mentors right there that are going to help this boy. Where's the dad? Where's the mom? We got to make sure, figure out where they are. If there's been a divorce, if the dad is safe and if it's possible, and 90%+ of the time it's possible, we got to get the dad really involved and support the dad in being really involved, especially as the kids hit pre-puberty. And then in the public sphere, we need to lobby. So we need to develop a lobby that's as powerful as the feminist, really more radical feminist lobby, that's more a freedom feminist lobby. Freedom feminism, term invented by Christina Hoff Sommers in her book, Freedom Feminism, which is the kind of feminist we all are, I think, where we want true equality. We want women and men, boys and girls, black people, white people. We want everyone. We're democratic, egalitarian. We want everyone to be equal. So we need to align with those folks and push against the feminophobic folks, the biophobic folks, the people who are pushing the old oppressor-oppressed model to explain everything. And the key word is, when you hear people attacking masculinity, then you go, okay, you know, I got to organize my friends here, and we got to go do a town hall. We got to go to the school board. We got to push back and say, very limited model, pretty much worthless model for what's going on in terms of why our boys kill themselves, why our boys kill other people. Doesn't it all deal with male depression? You know, so these are the things we need to deal with. And we got to put this whole sociological masculinity thing aside for a year. And let's deal with, you know, male depression. Let's deal with male mental health. Let's deal with male suicide. And let's take the whole masculine thing out for a year. And I suggest that, to push at the powers that be. And of course, to be able to do that, us, we will have to provide them another language. And the language is going to be male development. The language is going to be male biology. The language is going to be all kind of the stuff in these podcasts. And this is available. And people, you know, you can give your school board Saving Our Sons, or any of the other books, you know, out there, The Wonder of Boys, anything. Tim Wright's book, Searching for Tom Sawyer. We can give these books to school boards, and get them to help. And I know that some school boards do, like the Board of Education in Maryland. They've passed and funded a Black Boys Initiative. And in the first year of that initiative, it was a requirement that all the 12 pilot schools, I'm not going to say requirement, but all 12 pilot schools went through the Gurion Institute program of Boys and Girls Learn Differently, you know, and you know, they can see good results. So school boards can get behind this. We know they can. So that those would be the three sectors: education, parenting, and then public policy.
And as we said last week, and you mentioned again today, the information is there. The schools know that their boys are falling behind. The data says it. They may just not be necessarily aware of it because they've got all these other conflicting ideas, philosophies around them that they have a hard time seeing it. But you've said this many times before. There are very few, if any, educators who wake up in the morning and say, how can I ruin the life of a boy today? Right? They want to be great teachers for boys and girls. They just haven't really been challenged to think about it specifically as a boy issue and a girl issue. And that's where the Gurion Institute can be of great help.
Well, yeah, we definitely, that's the programming we provide, is getting them to see it through that lens and then giving them tools, practical tools, what to do in your classroom, and then track the data. And you see that the boys and girls, you know, both do better via test scores, behavioral referrals, you know, fewer kids go to the principal. Like, discipline is an area, classroom management is an area that is really difficult right now for teachers and some parents, actually, because their kids are getting suspended. Well, classroom management stuff really changes when teachers and schools go through these programs, because now they have far fewer discipline referrals. Mm. The boys are behaving better, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a positive cascade effect. And yeah, GurionInstitute.com, definitely, that's got it all there.
So that's kind of an overview of the challenges our boys are facing, and that we as parents, educators, are facing along with our boys and our girls, our daughters. And you can learn more if you go to michaelgurion.substack.com. We are going to be back with you next week. Michael and I have a brand new buddy, and he is CNN's anchor, Bill Weir. And we are going to be interviewing him next week. He's written a lovely book to his son about climate change. And it's something that impacts all of us. And we're going to talk to him about how do we help our kids, and how do we as families begin to look at the world differently so that we can create a better world for our kids as they grow up. And so we're looking forward to that conversation. And that will be for episode number 296, close. Ooh. On the heels of episode 300 coming up soon. So, Michael, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for letting me be a little bit abstract in these two and academic, but I hope they've helped.
Yeah, I think it just gives us a good perspective on what's going on and then some good practical stuff to get at it. So this has been the Wonder Parenting Podcast. I'm Tim Wright along with Dr. Michael Green. We'll be back with you next time with our new buddy, Bill Weir from CNN.